Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. This is the Roguecast for January 21st, and we're going to start off with some house cleaning. We just finished up our Gaming with Rogues last night, the first time at BJ's Brewhouse, which was actually really good.
What'd you eat, out of curiosity?
I had their Parmesan chicken, which is quite delicious.
Okay.
And also they do a handcrafted black cherry soda that was quite tasty.
All their handcrafted drinks are actually really good.
I only went there when they were first opening up, they're reopening this location a few years back. And I remember trying some of the sodas, and they were amazing.
It's good. It was a good place. It's a pretty good variety. And I felt bad for the one waiter they assigned us because we had said, oh, you know, there's probably been 8 or 9 of us, which would have been a big turnout for a Game of Rogues. In fact, there were 14 of us.
And so so that's really cool, though.
Yeah, so we had a great turnout. We had 3 games of Smash Up going up, which was a lot of fun. I believe the Dinosaur Ninjas won at our table. The Dinosaur Ninjas almost won at the second table, but they were thwarted at the last minute by a variety of other teams. And I don't remember who won the other game, but I know that I believe the dinosaur something were in the lead. So dinosaurs were the running theme. Our next Gaming with Rogues is going to be Pandemic, the co-op game, which we all love.
Yep.
Which is going to be on Monday, February 16th, and that is going to be at BJ's Brewhouse. We're also going to try BJ's for our Reading with Rogues.
Yeah.
Which next month will be Tuesday, February 10th, and we're going to do Alex plus Ada, which is our one of our favorite and artificial intelligence romance books.
Yeah. I don't know quite how to describe it. Is it a romance? Is it more about the AI and conceptual stuff?
It's a bit of both.
And it is definitely both.
But that's the Image book that is currently 15% off until February 10th.
And I will reiterate, by the way, the amazingness of Pandemic.
Yeah.
I feel like if you were to overall have like a staff-rated game, that this would probably rate the highest among us as a group.
Other than Cards Against Humanity, is the one that we play pretty much every time.
Yep.
And then Ladies' Night is going to be at Outback Steakhouse on February 9th. Also, one last bit of store business. Our inventory sale is starting. I don't know if you guys have all done this before, but it's our yearly inventory sale. We basically are clearing out stuff that is not sold in a couple of years. There's always a lot of good stuff. There's some stuff that breaks our heart to put on there for sale. But we just doesn't make sense to pay taxes on something we haven't sold for 2 or 3 years.
You will see tears roll down our faces, though.
It's true. But the good,
like, it's so good. Why didn't they buy it before?
But everything from comics to board games, graphic novels, you know, we'll have a bunch of stuff on the table. It will start on Monday, February 2nd. And it is 35% off plus the result of your 2d6 roll.
Right.
So
you always get to roll for extra bonus damage.
Anywhere from 37 to 47% off.
Yep.
And there will be a pretty good stack of stuff this year. So that's coming up in a couple of weeks. And then unstore related, but TV related.
Yeah.
This week pertains to the return of Flash and Arrow.
Yay. Very excited.
Yes.
You know, I have Flash liked on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And so it's always popping up on my feed. And they're a little bit more given to spoilers than I'd like. They're just like, you know, will Flash be able to take on blank, you know?
Yeah.
And it, like, sometimes they'll give away who the villains are and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's not – really, I haven't had anything major spoiled, but I sometimes wish they were like, I didn't have it on there.
You need to go to our spoiler blackout mode that we're trying?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough.
It is tough. Like, I could unlike it, but I kind of like seeing some of the other things when they'll do, like, a behind-the-scenes deal or an interview with some character or one of the actors, I mean.
Yeah. And I'm looking forward to that. Also, Arrow had a pretty significant ending mid-season, so I'm curious to see where they go from there.
I'm so behind, but I do know what you speak of. I need to sit down and actually just catch up with all of it. I have it all recorded.
Where are you at, Nick?
I have seen the first
season,
I've seen the first episode of season 3.
Okay.
My wife is behind. She hasn't even finished season 1 yet.
So. That's pathetic.
I don't know, Dave.
Season
where are
one
you?
Either.
Closing in on it.
Yep.
Closing in on it.
Also, our good friend Jason Murphy and a longtime customer, his new show, Hacking the System, is on National Geographic, came back on. They did a 2-episode pilot kind of thing. It's really fun. It is basically a combination of sort of Mythbusters and these sort of street magic and con artist type stuff that host Brian Brushwood does. So, like, this one is all about keeping your information secure in a digital world, like how easy it is to do identity theft and sort of how to protect yourself from that kind of thing. And they did one about sort of car tricks, and it's really interesting, fun stuff. And like I said, it's that mix of Mythbusters and con artist-y type thing.
I gotta say, I feel like Jason is kind of a natural for this.
Yeah.
You know, I hate to give a compliment to a friend who I'd rather bust his chops, but Jason is very telegenic, very funny, very quick on his feet. He's perfect for this kind of
thing. He gets to play the dopey sidekick.
Yeah, I know.
Which
I
is just hilarious. yeah, and I believe they use his full name. It's like Jason Murphy, and I think that just cracks me up. So.
Jason Murphy.
So it's really fun. My daughter is super excited to see it come back. I have not rewatched the new episode, which came on last night, but looking forward to catching up on that. And it's on National Geographic. Nat Geo. I believe is the channel called.
Natty G.
Finally, one last bit of TV news before we get to the our other stuff. There is an X-Files TV reboot in the offing.
Yeah. You know, we were talking about this.
This is just kind of rumored, right? There's no confirmation.
Fox has now said it's in talks.
Oh,
like, it was possible. Am I correct, Randy, that you were saying the other day that maybe Gillian Anderson
was on the Nerdist, and they said let's get X-Files 2015 trending, and there was a possibility that this was just sort of a thing that they did
type thing.
Yeah,
or maybe she just even did just randomly start talking about it with them. Like,
maybe
what
she
if?
Did,
and like people were so quick to jump on it that it's now seriously being considered.
But Fox has now said that they're talking about it, and Mulder and Scully would be in it. That both Gillian Anderson,
right?
It's not. I think it's not a reboot.
Okay,
and the question
that would make more sense. Although
but Fox didn't. Them and Chris Carter have a falling out? I mean...
It was Amazon that cut his show.
Okay.
Also,
I couldn't remember.
Do they need Chris Carter?
Yeah, Carter's involved.
It's his
show. Does he own it?
Yeah.
Yeah, he does.
Okay, I wasn't sure how that worked.
He's involved. Okay. The question of whether or not he would showrun it or not is... But I bet he probably would.
You know, I did have a thought, Randy, that when I was thinking about this earlier, that if they were going to reboot it, to swap the roles...
Yeah.
Go ahead and make her the diehard believer.
Right.
And test their acting abilities.
Well, I saw on Facebook, and I'm an apologist to which of my friends I'm stealing this from, he posted a notion of what he wants to see is two new agents, and that basically Gillian Anderson is essentially the smoking man, and Mulder has become sort of the insider deep throat guy.
Interesting.
And like the two of them are sort of pitted against each other, but they have this whole just like the the Deep Throat and Cigarette Smoking Man were originally. They had worked together, but now they've gone in different directions.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't think they'll do that. But I would love that. That sounds really interesting, to me.
Yep. I think they could do that. I would like anything to sort of wash the taste of the last movie.
Yeah.
I like the first X-Files movie pretty decently. It had John Locke in it from Lost.
You know, I think the more serialized television we're getting now means that we're ready for a different X-Files. Like, all the stuff that they couldn't do with X-Files where they sort of had to keep running forever and they couldn't really bring their stories to a conclusion.
They were pioneering the sort of... TV that had like long arc form TV, and now they've gotten pretty good at that.
Yeah, so I think actually a new X-Files where they actually know going in that they can use that structure could actually make up for some of the weaknesses that X-Files had.
That's true.
So that's exciting.
You know, on a quick related note, the new X-Files board game is out.
Oh yeah.
They are not like the massive merchandising machine that, say, Star Wars is, where one new Star Wars project is hitting. Like, there's also a video game and a comic and a bunch of other stuff. But there is an X-Files comic that's been going for a little bit. There is a board game that just hit.
Yep.
They're talking about the show again. So it's X-Files mania.
It's still on Netflix, isn't it?
I think so.
It's time
to break out your X-Files action figures.
The Todd McFarlane action figures.
Wow. I have those action figures. I gave them away, but they're really nicely done.
The Caveman?
I had the Alien and the Caveman, yes. So we got a question. And as always, we're happy to take questions. And we're very happy to get this one. So we're going to start with – it's a two-part question. Part one, we're going to answer, and then we're going to take a break. And part two is going to lead off our comics discussion this week.
Yeah.
So it's from Joey Halbert, and he says, I listen to your podcast weekly, and I'm really enjoying it. Thanks for all the time and effort you put into it.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Thank you. And he says, his first question is, comics used to feature fan letters at the end of each book. Did you ever submit a fan letter that was published?
Now, before we get into that, some of them have started doing letters again.
Yes, yeah.
And it's in fact, some comics like Sex
Criminals letter column, Saga's letter column.
Yeah, like that. Like it's a thing there.
Yeah.
Oh, and I would even say Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Like,
Walking Dead's letter column.
Like it's too dense for me to read. It's just too much. But I know some people just like. I mean, you know, that gives you some extra, a whole lot of extra to chew on at the end of the thing. You can kind of throw yourself into the community.
Yep.
So, Randy, why don't you – do you want to lead us off?
So mine were I'm sure I had a letter published at some point, but I can't remember it. But what I do remember is I used to write reviews, and occasionally those reviews, because it was like on AOL or something like this, would get picked up and put in as a letter, which was fine with me. But it was funny because they came off as so smug because I was writing for an audience as opposed to writing to the creators.
Right. And so it had this, like, you were like coming down from the mountain to deliver like a review.
Remember being somewhat sheepish about one of mine published in Stray Bullets. I thought it was a good letter. And I thought I had good points and everything, but the way it was written was like I was talking to an audience, not to the creators, and it came off as so sort of smug and condescending, and I was like, oh, that doesn't read as well when it's a letter.
Yeah,
that's funny. But there are definitely a few of those that my reviews got picked up and put in letter columns. I think that's mostly what I remember.
Oh, that's interesting. Nick, anything?
No.
just straight up no?
No, I actually never wrote into any books. I mean, I probably should have at some point.
Now, here's my question to you. Did you read letters pages?
Yeah.
And did you enjoy them?
Yeah, I did. They were a lot of fun.
You know, I remember...
I probably read one of yours.
It's possible. I've read a little bit of the behind-the-scenes things there, and I read that sometimes, like at Marvel, often the writers themselves were the ones answering.
Yeah.
But they would sort of like... The editor ghost answered it or whatever, but they would ghost, or that is to say, they would ghost write for the editor.
Yeah.
The editor would seem to be responding, but it would often be the writer. And they would cherry pick the good ones. They would, in a weird way, you know how like Yelp includes like bad reviews now?
Yeah.
They would occasionally include the critical one to
Chance to respond.
Right. It gives them a chance to respond. And of course, they could probably, if they wanted to like ridicule a point, they could probably find a letter from somebody who had made the point poorly and then kind of, you know, trash them in there.
Back in the day, there were great letter columns. I mean, especially in like creator-owned and you know, creator-focused books like Starman wasn't creator-owned, but it essentially was.
Yeah.
And it had a great letter column because it was all about sort of like collecting. It wasn't just about the book. It was about, you know.
In the beginning, James Robinson, I believe, outright invited people to write about collecting, what their passions were, what they thought about collecting.
John Byrne's column in Next Men was really good.
So this will bring me around to, yes, I have had letters published before.
Yep.
I was a bit of a letter hack in my college days. What would I guess end up being... not the tail end of it. I guess that wouldn't happen until, the late 90s that they kind of started disappearing for the most part?
Very late 90s. Early 2000s was when they finally started to – when the internet was becoming a bigger thing.
So the first letter I had published was in G.I. Joe.
Yep.
It was a test letter. My brother and I concocted it as a kind of a joke. I saw that what they did publish.
Yeah.
That there were certain things that if you cheered on and asked – you know, complimented the colorist and certain, you know, I was like, oh, those ones always seem to get printed.
Right.
And so we kind of did like a form letter. I actually did have like some question I wanted to ask about the team or call for some old members to return or something like that. But the letter was somewhat jokingly written and written under a pseudonym, which I would go on to use time and again. So it's kind of hard to look me up because I'm not going to say what the pseudonym was. I had a number of letters printed in John Byrne's Next Men in the 90s. And I think a few other Dark Horse comics, too. Like maybe an issue of Concrete, possibly.
Okay.
Specifically, I remember one in Dan Brereton's Nocturnals in that for initial miniseries. And several letters, or at least excerpts from, I guess this was one of my favorite letter columns of the time, the Legion of Superheroes, when it's the 5 years later
run. Oh, yeah, yeah.
A lot of people, there was a love or hate thing.
Yeah.
And a lot of people hated it.
Yeah.
But that was my introduction to the team, and that's what I was into.
That's a rough start to that team.
What's that?
I did come in on that.
It was difficult. If DC hadn't put out those role-playing game guidebooks, that they had one that went with that one, I would have been so lost. Because they called all the characters... By their real names. And there was a cast of like 40 or 50 people.
Yep.
But anyway, what I remember, Randy, you were talking about kind of feeling like you came off as like pedantic or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Every time one of my letters got... Like, I liked writing the letters, and I was a little bit snooty college jerk off kind of kid, but like I liked writing them, but when they were actually printed, I felt really embarrassed. I remember one time I was down at UT and I went by whatever the shop is that used to be down there,
Funny Papers,
yeah, to pick up my stuff there. And I was in this shop and I like opened up the letters page and I saw one of my letters in there, and I suddenly felt like I think I flushed in this store, and I was like, they're gonna know it was me. and I felt like I suddenly had like porn or that I was buying or something like that.
Even though you wrote it under a pseudonym.
Even though I wrote it under a pseudonym. You know, I think sometimes I might have used my real name. I don't remember now. But yeah, it always felt embarrassing to me after it actually happened.
Do you have every single issue that you've had a letter published on?
I think so.
Yeah. Oh, I don't. I have no idea.
I don't tend to sell a lot of my stuff. That's mostly just sort of my not pack radishness, but it's more of just like laziness. I've got stuff I could get rid of. But honestly, of those various ones, I'd probably hang on to all of them. But yeah, they're a little painful. I enjoy doing it, though. I recommend the experience.
All right. Joey had another question for us. We're going to use that to lead off our comics talk this week. So we'll be back in just a few seconds after taking a quick break. So this is usually a point in the podcast where we would talk about the comics for the week. And we are real briefly going to give a list of stuff we're reading, but there's not a lot of number ones that jumped out at us this week, and we just didn't have a lot of time to read because there was a press conference that we had to watch, and we'll be talking about that in a minute after we get to Joey's question, which is going to sort of lead into it. But real quick this week, the stuff that I am reading and looking forward to, we got our balance of comics of Daredevil number 12 from last week, which I'm looking forward to reading.
That was just, it was just delayed.
Diamond didn't give us all our books. there's a bunch of Spider-Verse stuff this week. Scarlet Spider, Spider-Woman, Spider-Verse team-up, and Amazing Spider-Man number 13. Spear Iron Man number 4, which I did get a chance to read, which is really good and really, Tony's getting pretty sinister. The Kitchen number 3, which is a Vertigo book that I've decided at this point I'm definitely liking well enough to pick up. And then the second issue of Image's Rumble, which, again, I still can't describe this book to you, but I really like it. And the second issue of Yehudi Mikado and Bakan's sort of speed racer, heavy metal, sci-fi weirdness book, Rocket Salvage from Boom and Archaea. I'm also picking up the Legend of Korra Art of the Animated Series Book 3 Change, because those books are always gorgeous.
Well, I didn't realize there were three of them.
Yeah.
Did they just, is it because they were just more aware that there was going to be a following for this?
Yes, they're doing one for each season, which they did not do for Avatar.
Okay. Because, yeah, I loved the Avatar one.
Yeah, they're doing one for each season, and so far they've been really, really good.
I was going to say, every season brings some new aspect to the show, so yeah. I get to sort of, talk about that.
Nick, what's on your list?
I have a good collection, so the third issue of the Weekly Wolverines book, which I did get a chance to read, which introduces a new character, another member of the Weapon X Brigade, as I like to call them.
What is her name? Fentanyl.
Yeah, so she's...
Phantom X related. Phantom X adjacent.
I like that. Phantom X adjacent.
Yeah, that sounds right.
But she has like a pet wolf that she's sort of psychically connected to.
Oh, so instead of a flying saucer, she's got a wolf?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay, that makes sense.
But there's a cool appearance from another Marvel hero in this, and sort of...
It's a very memorable opening. She's trying to steal something from this character.
Yeah.
Don't want to name who it is, but it's fun.
Oh, it's Wando on art.
Yeah, Wando.
I was about to say that's who the person was. She's trying to steal something from Wando.
I like the art on this.
No, the art is great.
And that was that was the notable thing about it for me as I was flipping through it, is the art.
It's actually a lot of fun. Image's doing a new sort of fantasy book called Rein.
R-E-Y-N, because Image is always spelling things weird.
Yeah, also it's fantasy comics. You have to have crazy-ass names.
Sort of following the exploits of a paladin, sort of the last of his tribe.
Nice art on that one, too.
Yeah, it actually really is. Batman and Robin, issue 38, comes out this week. Damian with superpowers.
You could say that's a spoiler, but it's on the cover.
It's on the cover, and it's actually a really great cover. Very bright yellow.
It appears to be, like Superman style, tearing the shirt open with the Robin logo underneath, and it looks like bullets are bouncing off of it.
And I will say, there's just a really, really good number of panels in here that are just really great gags that Gleason gets to draw, and just some fun action bits, too. So I really, really enjoyed that. There's a new Boom book that I've wanting to read called Burning Fields. Of course, all the Spider-Verse and what Randy said, Rumble, which I'm excited for. But I think that's about all. There is a new Galaxy Quest book that I'm curious to try.
Yep.
That is presumably, I haven't read it yet, but it's like going to be, I guess, just a follow-up to the movie.
It's called The Journey Continues.
Oh, wow. It's like right there in the title.
Dave, what's on your stack?
Y'all have covered pretty much all of it, but I just wanted to mention... the new Power Girl is that's shown up, who's a different character from the regular Power Girl.
Yeah,
right. I guess from Earth 2.
She's a teenager.
Well.
Maybe that's where she's from. Yeah,
but she looks like a young African American superhero. She's got a kind of a cool new costume, and she's joining the Teen Titans. So I have not been reading. Is it who's the writer?
Will Pfeiffer's writing it.
Yeah. I haven't been reading his run, but I was flipping through this and I really like the art on it.
Or as Ken Peele would say it, Will Pfeiffer.
Scott Hepburn is the artist, and I really like his style. So I thought I might look in on this issue to see what's the deal with this new character and just how that run is running.
Pfeiffer was most notable for his run on Catwoman, right?
Yeah. Catwoman and Dial H.
Oh, I forgot Dial H, yeah.
He also did some Vertigo stuff.
Did he do Aquaman back in the day?
I believe he did do some Aquaman, yeah.
Yep. And then the other sort of notable for me is the second issue of the Star Trek Planet of the Apes thing, which was that at least the first issue was pretty fun. It's you know, the 60s Star Trek and the 60s Planet of the Apes.
Sure.
So it's a fairly natural fit, and they're having fun with it.
All right, so now we're going to lead into a much bigger wider comics discussion, not about this week, but Joey had a second question for us. Joey Halbert had a question, and the question was, there seems to be a creative explosion going on in comics right now, both in subject matter and art. That being said, is there anything missing from the industry that you'd like to see come back? And I think we sort of pondered
it a little bit.
Yeah.
And mostly what we came up with is we're pretty happy with where things are.
Yeah.
But one thing that does seem to be coming back, both Marvel and DC are doing sort of a little throwback thing.
Yeah, there's sort of what seems like it could be retro stuff going on.
Yeah.
Are we talking about their big events coming up? Yeah. You're talking about like Secret War and – is it Secret War or Secret Wars?
Secret Wars.
Yes. Secret Wars and DC Convergence.
Yeah, both of which are starting about the same time, right? They're both starting in May.
I believe so.
So do we want to talk about those?
Yeah. So we just – one of the reasons we ran a little late today was because we wanted to watch the Marvel press conference for Secret Wars.
They made it kind of a big to-do about it, that they were going to do a live – description of it at Midtown Comics in New York.
They've been leading into this thing called Time Runs Out and Jonathan Hickman's Avengers and New Avengers, which I know Nick has been keeping up on.
Right. Yeah, it's just one of the... I mean, since he came on, like Randy said, he's been doing something called where there are convergences, where there are different planets.
No, DC owns convergences, Nick. You can't say that word.
Okay.
There have been...
Collisions.
Collisions. Yeah, it's like intersecting universes or something, right?
Intersecting worlds, like smashing into each other. Sometimes, they both are destroyed. Other times, one survives, depending on what inhabits those worlds.
So it sounds precisely like the kind of tool you would use if you wanted to rebuild the Marvel Universe or something like that, potentially.
Yes.
But what we're going to get in Secret Wars is a thing called Battle World.
Well, and that's what the original was called.
True.
But the new Battle World seems to be...
Well, let's see. Before you say, the original Battle World was the Beyonder made up this planet to sort of do the good versus evil fighting between Marvel's heroes and villains. And it had, like, all these alien worlds just making it up. So the geography might be, like, volcanoes one place, and then, you know, storms somewhere just, you know, like a mile away. And as it happens, there was a suburb of Denver.
Yeah.
And the new one has a sort of a broader scope.
Yeah, the new one seems to be different timelines. So they're like, they're heavily focusing on the events. So like there's one part of it that is World War Hulk. There's one part of it that is Civil War. There's one part of it that is House of M.
Marvel Zombies.
Age of Ultron.
What I can't quite figure out is like, of course, each one of those took place was an entire world. I mean, that was just a point of time.
Well, I think that's what it basically is. Like, each world is going to be sort of compressed and put into one world.
Right. But yeah, like, how do you take the concept of Civil War and put it in what's its own sort of country?
Well, I believe the Civil War is still going on in this one. That is like, that is in the middle of the story.
But that spanned the entire world, potentially.
Sure.
And yet it's going to take place inside a country that I'm going to assume is, you know,
What I'm guessing, and we don't know anything, but what I'm guessing is that they are going to do a thing where basically they take the characters who are most endemic to that version.
The inhabitants of that.
And they, like, the Iron Man and Cap who are at each other's throat, and the Marvel, you know, Peter Parker in the Golden Spider costume, and those guys will all be in the Civil War land.
There's even one that's like the 90s X-Men.
Yeah. There's the animated series. There's Days of Future Past.
There's Future Imperfect, so you're going to have Maestro in there.
So all these sort of different terrains are going to be part. There's an interactive map up on Marvel.com, either right now or very soon after
this
show.
Which actually will kind of give you a, maybe not complete rundown of every character and world that is going to be in there, because I'm sure they're going to hold a few back.
Yeah.
As sort of, hey, look, we have these fun things.
But the interesting thing about this, it's going to be an 8-issue miniseries that is going to be written by Jonathan Hickman, art by Asad Rubik, and covers all by Alex Ross.
So it's a pretty powerhouse creative team. Yeah.
And it is going to be they never came out and said what we were expecting. Nick has been sort of saying that possibly he thinks they might be doing a reboot,
which Marvel has definitely never done before.
Yeah.
Well, one or two things we know about it, that apparently in some way, shape, or form, the Ultimate Universe and the regular Marvel Universe will just definitively be merged.
They're going to merge. What they said is that Battleworld will be the Marvel Universe for this event. Like, there will be no side stories. Like, everything's going on the Battleworld.
Right. So for like 8 months, all of Marvel will be this world of amalgamated world of all these different eras.
They've also said that during this time period, they're going to launch new books.
Yep, they're going to launch new miniseries, new ongoings.
Some will be miniseries. So they're going to definitely, contribute to the overall story that is Secret Wars.
We will not be getting even a Crisis or a 52-style reboot where everything is new number one.
Correct. I honestly think...
But
I don't quite know
what we are going to get.
No. When all said and done. It might be sort of an amalgam of different ideas.
Yeah.
Who knows what it actually will
be. In other words, it could conceivably be a reboot in some way, or it could be the Marvel Universe continues but slightly changed, or it could be it continues with other, books that will show all these different eras if they're popular enough.
But it is going to be a big thing, and I actually think it's going to be a lot of fun. I like the creative team quite a bit. I mean, Jonathan Hickman, I know you guys have had some issues with it.
I'm not big on Hickman's Marvel work as much as I am his independent
work. Yeah, I definitely think his independent work is a bit stronger, but I own, the giant-size Infinity crossover. They did that huge hardcover.
Yeah, yep.
I thought it was great, and I've loved his Avengers run and New Avengers run. And I think Asad Rubik has always been a huge artist.
Yeah.
I'm not huge into Hickman, but Rubik I'm unabashedly a fan of.
I mean, his Loki miniseries, and then what was the book that he was on more recently?
He was on Thor.
He was on Thor.
Yeah.
Which was fantastic.
All I know is what makes me nervous is how much I'm liking in Marvel that I don't want to go away.
Right, I actually feel like Marvel is about as strong as I've seen them in the last decade at least. And maybe in the last 20
years. And I think that's the worry that probably some people are having. And there's, of course, people are overreacting on the internet.
Of course it's the internet.
But I think probably we can say pretty unequivocally that Ms. Marvel's not going away.
Yeah, here's the thing. The things that are working for them, I don't think they're going to be like, oh, let's just cast those aside. They obviously need to get
rid of it. I don't even think they're going to get rid of, the female Thor or any of those. Those have not run their course yet.
No. They're definitely going to be incorporated. They've said the second issue, which is their big oversized issue of Secret Wars, is going to be all Thors. So every version of Thor you can think of.
Yeah.
So female Thor included. They're not going to get rid of these things. They're going to utilize them. And
what seems pretty clear is that the Spider-Verse event is going to go on, ends in Spider-Man 15, which is going to be right before all this. So probably all the I think what's going to happen is it's going to be like Secret Wars tie-ins. Everything's going to be going on. Everyone's going to be on these battle worlds.
Yeah.
Right.
And I don't know exactly what that means. We don't know a lot. I'm with our sort of spoiler blockade that we're doing in movies. I would like to not know too much more. I don't want to know too much what's going on.
For our ordering purposes,
they're sort of
here's the question: is like the are the Civil War heroes going to be forced to fight the '90s cartoon X-Men?
What they've also said is they're going to make even more announcements in the throughout the next 2 weeks,
right?
For other books and other hints.
If you keep your eyes peeled on comic sites and comic book resources,
I'm actually really looking forward to messing around with the map just to see sort of what everything is going to be included, because
is there going to be an interactive sort of thing?
Yeah,
or, if nothing else, you can click on it. And also, I should say, this is a good opportunity if you've been curious about some of Marvel's events in the past, whether it's Civil War or the Iron Man story from the 80s, the Armor Wars, which we know is going to be also one of the places, landscapes.
Yep.
Good opportunity to check those things out. A lot of them, most of them are collected now.
Yep. Yep.
So, if you're what is this Civil War all about? Well, check it out.
And then also that Secret Wars is going to launch with the number zero that's going to be on Free Comic Book Day.
Oh, yes. Right.
So,
right.
And we will have that. We are of planning course. Free Comic Book Day now, so...
So should we talk about the DC counterpoint?
Before we do that...
Yeah.
I want to talk about our crazy theories we had before the press conference.
I actually wrote mine down.
So we had theories going about what they were going to announce today, and the answer was sort of a no answer. They didn't announce much of anything, really. It was all right.
It was sort of more leaks and sort of like hints and innuendos. Right.
So, but Nick's theory has been throughout this has been sort of a reboot thing, which is probably the closest to the truth. But Dave had a crazy theory.
I had a crazy theory, but going on the fact that they said that this was something Marvel's never done before,
right?
And that the title Secret Wars had some special meaning that we would later learn that had changed. My craziest theory was that they were going to take their newly returned property of Star Wars and merge it with the Marvel Universe. Secret Wars, Star Wars, you know, with all the universe hopping and time traveling and stuff. It would be pretty easy to do that, and, you know, can you imagine, like, the Guardians of the Galaxy teaming up with, you know, Han Solo and his crew?
I do think that's a natural event to do, by the way. If they can't do DC versus Marvel anymore...
Doctor Doom must meet Darth Vader at some point.
A Star Wars Marvel amalgam thing where the universes merge would be a fun, brief event.
There's been so many video games and things lately that have kind of thrown those kind of things into a blender. I think we talked about it last week, like Kingdom Hearts and all of that kind of stuff, and the Disney Infinity stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
That was my crazy and not a true theory, but I did also think if Marvel and DC merged universes, that would be a crazy.
I think that would legitimately make people's heads at night.
It would definitely make my head.
That would be the big news. Yeah.
I don't want it to happen, honestly. No. But
my crazy theory was that the Secret Wars was going to be all the... Because based on the Alex Ross art that we'd seen, that all the 80s heroes were going to fight the modern-day heroes, and that in some cases the 80s heroes would be the ones left behind, and they would become the current incarnations of the heroes.
And I still think there's a possibility of that.
Yeah, something like that, like that happening. I don't know if it would be specifically 80s, but it could be all alternate eras could end up.
Yeah.
You know, like... If 90s X-Men win, then Jubilee and Morph are back.
If Jubilee stops being a vampire, I'm okay with it.
I kind of like Jubilee being a vampire. Is she still a vampire?
She's still a vampire.
Okay, they don't make a big deal out of the new X-Men book, so.
No.
So the flip side of this is DC's Convergence, which they've been talking about for a while.
Somewhat similarly, we don't know exactly what the end game is on this.
Well, there's some kind of Convergence bubble. And all the timelines are going to merge in this bubble, and they're going to meet. So there's, like, Vampire Batman meeting up with Flashpoint Aquaman and this kind of stuff. It's, like, all the different timelines.
But we know Batman, that, like, Red Sun.
Red Sun stuff,
structurally, what they're going to do is for 2 months,
all
of the regular DC titles will be displaced by a two-issue series.
And there's a main Convergence series. Okay, there's a four-issue Convergence series.
By chance, are they teasing that on Free Comic Book Day?
I believe they might be.
Okay. Yeah. And all the covers for the first batch of these basically showed pre-New 52 characters.
Yeah.
Which, for those of us who are like have been a little shaky on a lot of the New 52 stuff, we're like... Yay, it's the characters back. It's Stephanie Brown as Batgirl. You know, it's Superman when he actually had the trunks on and didn't look like a little kid.
It's also pre-Crisis. I mean, pre-Crisis and pre-Flashpoint. It's a lot of different characters, a lot of different versions.
Yeah, it's not like, just pre-New 52.
It's every iteration it's from everything. All their history. Yeah.
Right. But they usually saw Superman married. And by the way, to compare this to the Marvel thing, one of the Marvel Battle Worlds showed the married Peter Parker and MJ. So there's a lot of similarities. With a kid?
Yeah, with a kid.
Oh, I remember that.
Yep.
Because that didn't actually happen, though.
It did in Spider-Girl in the Ultra Universe.
Okay. It's that one. Yeah. But they teased, like, just the Peter MJ wedding, I guess, was what they showed. So... so I have an interest in checking out some of these, if only to see some of my favorite heroes from times past.
Yeah. It's a good way to sort of dip into nostalgia a little bit.
Well, it feels like DC could be testing the waters for, like, I don't know, I feel
a
like...
A new multiverse.
Yeah, it feels like so recent since they did the New 52 relaunch, and that it's been relatively successful for them commercially, that I don't see, like, a full relaunch But I could see them doing sort of something like what Marvel did 10 years ago with the Ultimate line.
Yeah.
And just sort of like launching a little side
thing. I could see sort of a revamp or a reshuffle or something.
Right.
Sort of.
Well, As with Secret Wars, we don't really know what they're going to do afterwards.
This is all speculation. Yeah. It's kind of fun speculation. Yeah. Just, yeah. The nature of comics to speculate.
Well, I saw like the original, the 1980s era Legion of Superheroes in there, and it reminded me, oh yeah, I like the Legion of Superheroes. Yeah. They haven't found a version that has been able to stick for like, I'd say over a decade at this point. Mark Waid's didn't take.
Yeah.
The new 52 one didn't take.
Yeah.
And, so last time I kind of really enjoyed it was be like, maybe like the Abnett Lanning, run, which was what, late 90s, early 2000s? Yeah. I liked seeing the Levitz era. That's something I missed when it originally came out, but bought a lot of back issues of and had fun with. And so I'll be curious to see what they're going to be doing with them.
Yeah, and I also, this is going to be the summer of, I mean, summer events is always, there's always summer events at Marvel and DC. Yeah. And this summer the events are sort of a mix of every possible version of the characters, so something out there will probably resonate with you.
This is true.
And if it doesn't, well, there's still tons of stuff coming out from Image and Dark Horse.
That's true.
So
and Boom and all the rest. Yeah.
Can Image have a convergence where all their properties meet?
No.
What you're saying is you need Saga to meet Savage Dragon?
No, I want Saga to meet Alex plus Ada or, you know, Birthright.
Sorry,
or,
it's got to be Spawn.
This is a terrible Spawn idea.
Spawn will meet Alex and Ada.
Chip Zdarsky can make it work, right?
Chip Zdarsky is the one man who could make that work. all right. That about wraps it up for Comics Talk this week, and we'll be back to talk about topics in just a few seconds. So to close out this week's, Dave and I played along with some other people, Dave ran actually, an indie RPG.
Right. I think we mentioned we were going to run it.
Yes.
Or that I was going to run it. Called Dread.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, back in stock at the store.
Yep.
And I thought it went pretty well. I was very happy.
This is the last time I was this into a game was like Fiasco. I thought this was a really cool mechanic. I thought it was a lot of fun to play.
So it's sort of one of those games that, although you could probably play it over multiple nights, we did a one night thing, and I thought that worked nice because it kind of worked like a standalone horror movie. And in it, you use a Jenga tower. So you do have to buy a Jenga tower.
Yeah.
But it's very fun. Essentially the way it works is this. As the characters go through the story of the evening, when they have to do things that might be difficult, they have to pull blocks from a thing. If it's something like, you know, a killer is on the side of the car and, you know, you're trying to, you know, scrape him off against the light pole or something like that, you might actually have to pull a couple blocks or two or three blocks.
Right.
And the GM running it sort of determines these things, and the players have to decide if they're willing to do it, because if the tower collapses, the player who collapsed it is out of the game, and perhaps quite likely dead.
Yeah.
Unless the situation, like, if it happens to collapse, like when y'all are just, like, standing around trying to figure things out,
yeah,
well, then that might not necessarily have happened. But it could also be one of those scenes in a movie where the killer suddenly strikes and you're not ready for it at all. We only had, I think, one collapse over the course of the night. I was trying to learn the timing on it and try and keep it so that the tower was at its flimsiest during the dangerous sequences. But we did have one death and a very near thing at the end.
Oh, man. It was very tense because we were watching. Every time we had to go in for something, we were sure we were going to die. We managed to pull it out. But
and there were some times when y'all decided not to pull, effectively meaning that your character didn't sort of accomplish whatever the action was. And you're like, well, we'll try something else.
Yeah.
Because it was the tower was getting so rickety.
Yeah, it's really it really is great. It's a horror game, and it's used for a variety of horror stuff.
And the idea of it was to try and do something that's difficult to do with regular RPGs and horror, which is create the rising tension of a horror movie, where it's like as things go on, you get closer and closer to death. And standard sort of D&D sort of approach, or even indie games, have a hard time getting that tension to ramp that way.
Well, I think when you have stats and that kind of thing, and you know what your character's capable of, it's a lot easier to think, oh well, unless I roll a one, I'm gonna succeed at this, and so it's a lot less scary,
right?
Like you're not as invested. But this was, first of all, we didn't really know anything was going on. We didn't have any sense of what the monster was or anything.
The genre was going to be whether it was going to be zombies, werewolves, anything like that.
Yeah. And so what we have was the character generation is really interesting too, because you send it a questionnaire.
Yeah, the GM kind of creates maybe about 10 questions that are sort of leading questions that'll be things like, you know, what tragedy in your past pushed you to end up working as a mortician or whatever.
One of the questions for mine was, when was the last time you had a drink?
Oh, yeah.
Which sort of implies a problem with drinking.
Yeah.
And that was interesting. And there was sort of a question where my character was married to one of the other ones, and that was sort of built into it. Like, I didn't choose that. It was built into our characters.
Right. And so and the game book advises you to try and sort of give the characters something to live for.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, you know, various characters, I asked them different things on their different questionnaires. And by the way, it was fun to come up with the questions, and I loved getting the answers. The players, I was very, very happy with the answers they gave.
Do you actually come up with the questions yourself, or do they have sort of a guidelines in the Dread RPG?
They have lots of suggestions, and in fact, just as kind of a bonus thing, running along the bottom of every single page of the whole book are more questions. It's like in the bottom margin, they have like 100 extra questions. So I don't know if I used any of their questions, but they were good springboards. And sometimes you would ask about quirky things, and sometimes you would ask about dark things, and sometimes you would ask about things that gave them like advantages. Like, I think, Randy, I said something like, for a guy who's like a pacifist, you've been in a lot of fights. Why is that?
Yeah, yeah.
And so that implied that you had some fighting skills if it came to it. And you got to kind of decide how to define that. And you came up with some interesting answers to your question.
Yep.
And they definitely outlined your character.
Yeah.
And what that would mean maybe is that then if he was struggling with somebody, you might not have to pull a block. Because we would know you would have some physical skill.
Right.
But yeah, the questionnaires were half the fun, at least on my part.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
I had a really good time with it. And they kind of came up with characters that I think would be difficult to come up with for otherwise. Like I don't think players are going to not necessarily think, oh, let's be a married couple in this.
Yeah.
You know, it just wouldn't necessarily come up. So I like being able to see that way. And it was fun leading you guys through a creepy horror mystery.
And also, you didn't have, like, inventory. Like, we didn't have a ton of stuff. Like,
and nobody ever had to look up a rule.
Yeah, and also, like, we didn't, like, the thing that really made it work as horror, I think, partly, is we didn't have, like, weapons.
Right.
Like, we had one person had a concealed pistol that you had sort of built into the questionnaire.
Right. I sort of isolated the group at a ski resort.
Yeah.
Sort of like the kind of the thing you might do in a video game.
Yeah.
And then I wanted a reason for them to kind of stick together and not just break up. So I had them as a news team that was looking into a story that had some mysterious underpinnings. And so that way they would at least have a basic reason to kind of know each other and stay together. But
it's really fun. And I wasn't sure how this was all going to work, but because I'm always wary of rules light systems.
Right.
Even though I've had fun with several of them. But this was a really good – and several of the people in this game also run other games. We've been talking about incorporating the Jenga block in other games to use as sort of a tension builder because it was a really interesting aspect of it. But really, really good. I'm actually planning to run this at some point. I thought it was a great game.
And here's there's one other kind of fun thing is that I'm considering running that same adventure for some other people.
Yeah.
And what I'm going to probably do is I've got all my notes on the adventure, and I'm just going to send the questionnaires to them and see what very different, no doubt, answers they turn up for the exact same questions. It's like a little weird Rorschach test. I feel like I'm some kind of like a creepy psychiatrist testing you for weaknesses or something.
We need to. If it wasn't so long, it'd be a perfect podcast. Maybe we could edit it down or something.
Yeah, I could see doing something like that.
The other thing that Dave and I participated in this week, Nick was busy watching movies. He didn't have time for any of this stuff.
I went to the theater quite a bit.
And but we did an 80s movie marathon, mini marathon, two movies, with some friends. And
by the way, Nick, do you want to just tell us your quick ratings on the movies
you
saw?
Yes, tell us the movies you saw.
I saw Black Hat, the new Chris Hemsworth hacker movie, which I would actually suggest you go see the original Hackers movie with Johnny Lee Miller and Angelina Jolie.
Wow.
It's a better experience.
Really?
And this is Michael Mann, too, but it just...
He's had his flops before.
Aside from a few interesting sort of over-the-top bloody action scenes, it was missing a lot of what I like in
Michael
Mann
movies. Was it realistic?
Yeah, they tried to play it as more realistic.
Now, Nick, did you like Collateral?
I did like Collateral.
Because that was one that Collateral, I wasn't sure I liked it first, and then I went back to it, I liked it better.
Yeah. This one I don't think I'll go back to.
Oh, okay.
Then I saw American Sniper, which I will just say Bradley Cooper's performance is quite good. I really enjoyed the movie. A lot of scenes that were very intense and hard to watch.
I would imagine.
And then,
have you seen what was the one about the
bombs?
Yeah,
I know what you're talking about.
Hurt Locker. Yeah, I mean, we saw all that together.
Yeah. That's what I was wondering if it had that.
Is it somewhat compared to that as far as like its realism?
And there's just really some intense scenes. I was very impressed with Bradley Cooper's. He's just got that range as an actor that can do sort of comedic, you know, and drama, and it's nice to find those actors.
Yeah.
And then the third one I saw was Paddington, which I had a lot of fun with. It was just sort of a British family-friendly
live action.
It's, well, of course, the bear is live action, but
not a live bear. That's a different movie.
But
Paddington's mauled the children.
Oh, Paddington.
But never,
wait, they're British. Oh, Paddington.
Never once did I feel like the bear was in peril or anything. But
it was kind of light.
It was very light, but it was fun to see Nicole Kidman play as sort of an over the top villain. No, she had a lot of fun with it. And just the family is really cool, and I thought...
Are they British?
They're all British. I think the male lead, if I'm not mistaken, is one of the people off of Downton Abbey.
Okay.
I actually really, really enjoyed it.
Okay. Cool. The movies we watched were Beverly Hills Cop.
Yep.
And Alien Nation.
Yep, we were doing our buddy Jarek, who we've mentioned in previous podcasts.
Yep.
He is actually very well versed on 80s movies, but he's got a few gaps in there. And this was, and we thought we'd do sort of a buddy cop night.
Yep.
And so first was Beverly Hills Cop, which I have not seen in a long time.
And I watched last year. I love Beverly Hills Cop. I think I watch it every year.
Yeah.
The director is Martin Brest,
who did Midnight Run, which is one of my favorite movies.
And not much else.
It's in my all-time list. Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
I love Midnight Run.
I will watch Midnight Run with the drop of a hat. If you have not seen Midnight Run with Robert De Niro and Charles Grodin, it is one of the great buddy comedies of all time.
Yep. Even though you are somewhat familiar with the tropes of characters who despise each other at the beginning and somehow learn to get along or whatever.
I honestly think it's probably Robert De Niro at some of his funniest.
It is. It's great.
Yeah.
I mean, the moment-to-moment writing, the action sequences, it's a really good movie.
And Beverly Hills Cop is not a bad companion
movie. No, it's not.
I don't think it's as good as.
I don't either.
But you know what it reminded me? You know, because I actually saw that when it came out of the theater. I watched saw Beverly Hills Cop. I was... I was by no means over 18 or whatever
because
it was a rated R movie.
Yeah,
with some a pretty execution style killing within the first 5 or 10 minutes.
My cousin took me to see it as a double feature with Breakfast Club.
Oh, that's
at a drive-in.
That's a pretty good double feature.
It is actually.
Does it open with the them selling cigarettes out of the back?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And that great chase scene. Here's the funny thing. I remember playing this when I was babysitting when I was like 15 or 16 for a couple of 10-year-olds or something. And they thought the chase scene was hilarious because they just were laughing at Eddie Murphy. I can now only think back and think how inappropriate it was. But their parents left the VHS for us, so
it's on them.
But it's an interesting mixture of comedy and drama. So there's, you know, Eddie Murphy gets to definitely chew up the scenery, and he's pretty awesome as a Detroit cop, of course, who ends up misplaced in Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
But the actual story is kind of serious, it turns. You know, it's like he's investigating an old friend who was like kind of a hoodlum guy who gets killed right outside his apartment.
Yep.
And, you know, the bad guys have that sort of... I don't know who that... We looked up that bad guy actor.
Yeah.
The guy with the...
He's real slimy looking.
He's real slimy looking, and he definitely conveys a level of bad guy that's like Bond villain level.
Yeah. 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 Bond villain's good way to put
actually
it.
Actually kind of scary.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed the... I guess what I'd say is I enjoyed the drama more than I expected.
It's a good mix. It's a good, solid action movie, and the comedy is funny, but it's not just all goofy. Like, there's definitely and that's what Martin Brest did well. He could do the stuff where it was really legitimately funny, but then the action still had consequences.
Yep. And so, of course, supporting players include Judge Reinhold.
Yep.
As the sort of doofus... kind of naive,
young cop,
Beverly Hills cop,
Ronnie Cox.
Ronnie Cox as the
police lieutenant.
Ronnie Cox. Who? What do we decide we know him best from?
Oh well, he's in Total Recall. He's the bad guy in Total Recall. He's the bad guy in RoboCop.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know him from a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, I love Ronnie Cox.
Yeah, Ronnie Cox is great.
Hugely fun.
I forgot Jonathan Banks is in it.
Jonathan Banks is in it, who you might know from as Mike from Breaking Bad. He's like the big, he's the goon, he's the henchman.
He was in Community as well.
And he was in Community as well.
Who's, who's the other cop who was Marvin in?
John Ashton.
John Ashton. And he's great in this too. He's, they, you know, of course, the Beverly Hills Cops are the sort of the straight-laced guys by the book. And he's... He deadpans in a certain kind of really excellent way that was also used to good effect in Midnight Run. So.
Yeah.
Let's not forget Bronson Pinchot.
And Bronson Pinchot.
Aquil is ready to... Ahmed...
and to serve him my cappuccino?
Yes, he does. And then there's Eddie Murphy. It honestly probably is best. We were talking about this, and maybe Trading Places.
Yeah, Trading Places is the only thing but that this kind is, of rivals.
This is probably my favorite, or 48 Hours, but...
Right, but he really got to kind of be the star in this one.
Yeah.
And let's not forget the synthesizer soundtrack
by Pointer Sisters. Harold Faltermeyer.
And Pointer Sisters providing all the other music.
Yep.
It reminded me, it got me thinking I need to make this list at some point of movies that feature one artist almost exclusively for the soundtrack. So you know how Prince did all the background music that was not the orchestral music, but he had all the pop music stuff going on in Batman. From Tim Burton. Queen did all of Highlander. Wang Chung did all of To Live and Die in L.A.
That's true. Right.
So you can make a decent list.
Movie challenge just based on this.
The last picture show that used exclusively Hank Williams.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, there's lots of options.
But it was really good. It is on Amazon streaming and possibly Netflix.
I think it's just on Amazon.
It might just be on Amazon streaming. But if you haven't seen it's Beverly Hills Cop is a really fun 80s action movie. Yep. And the second private doll feature was one that I had not seen in years.
Yep. Alien Nation, which again, I saw in the theater. And it was a great time when I originally saw it.
I haven't seen it since the theater, probably.
In retrospect.
Me neither. And it holds up really well.
Does it?
Yeah.
It's James Caan is the racist cop who's forced to work with the race that he hates, and it becomes realizes that he's been wrong or something like that.
We're talking about this. Dirty Harry was created as a guy who hated everybody.
Yeah.
And so, almost instantly he had, a black cop partner.
Yep.
He didn't like black people.
Yeah.
Sure.
He had a woman partner. He didn't like women.
Yeah.
So they immediately
just wanted to be by himself.
He might have even created that dynamic to start with. But here they turn it on its end a little bit, and the cop is literally an alien.
Yeah,
not just an illegal alien, and but an alien.
It's Mandy Patinkin giving it just unrecognizable under the makeup, but he's great.
It's very much, I would say, kind of like a little bit like Data on Star Trek.
Yeah, a little bit.
Kind of quizzical and bemused, but kind of.
But he has a sly sense of humor too.
He does, and I like that's what I liked about the script to it. Scripted by Rockne S. O'Bannon,
who you might know from Farscape.
Yeah, would go on to create Farscape, and I think prior to that, he'd also done Twilight, the new Twilight Zone. There's other 80s sci-fi.
He's a genre guy.
Yeah, and it's an above average buddy cop script with a lot of cool moments, good action scenes. It gets going real fast, and I watched this bit on Cracked the other day where they were decrying movies. That used what they saw as a crutch of newscasts to get viewers up to speed.
Right.
But the weird thing is, I usually like when movies do
Me too. I think it's a great way to do exposition.
Yeah, it's a good way. And not having to spend a lot of time on it, but get all these sort of bullet point information.
It makes it feel real, too, if they do their job right.
Yeah.
And Alien Nation begins with it's a newscast, and they're like, today is the 3-year anniversary of the arrival of the newcomers.
The newcomers are what they call the aliens, which is great.
Yeah, it seems like completely believable as to, the benign name they would give them. And they integrate footage of Reagan, who I think is supposed to probably letting Cuban refugees.
I'm sure he's talking about refugees from a real place.
And then the man on the street interviews that because, of course, the aliens get integrated into our society. But they were they're a slave race.
Yeah, they're sort of bred to be hardworking, and they're able to do jobs that humans can't.
Right.
And
so there's a fairly obvious metaphor of people that of concerns about
immigrants,
immigrants stealing American jobs and stuff like that, and
They actually do a lot with aliens, giving them a personality as well.
Yeah, they get drunk on spoiled milk.
That's right.
Saltwater is like acid to them. they've built a lot of culture in a very short time.
Yeah, they have unusual names because they had to name like the ship had like
3 million of them or
yeah,
something.
It was like 3 million or something.
So his partner's name is Sam Francisco.
Yeah, it was like the people naming him just ran out of stuff and started kind of making up jokes.
Remember James Caan giving a pretty good performance?
Yeah, he's good. He's good in this.
Anybody, you know, Caan is like it is a good solid performance as a cranky but kind of likably cranky.
I don't think he knows how to do anything but being cranky.
Yeah, that's probably true. I don't know if I've ever seen him not be a guy who's ready to beat somebody up. You know?
Also, Terrence Stamp, who played Zod in Superman 2, is sort of the bad guy of the piece, and he's really good here.
Yeah, he's fun. What it reminded me of, well, Randy, you mentioned that there was a TV show spinoff of
it.
I don't know how long it ran, 3 years, 5 years?
It was a few years, yeah.
Was that on, like, a fledgling Fox Network?
It was a fledgling Fox Network, yep.
Yeah, like, in the same era as, like, 21 Jump Street and stuff like that. I did not watch it at the time.
But I did, and I loved it.
I don't know why I didn't, because I had I loved the movie. And
I imagine you can get it somewhere.
It's available on DVD.
I've heard people mention that it's really pretty good.
It's up pretty well.
Some of
I know it can't hold up great, like, you know, with like compared to some of the best of modern TV.
I believe it may be in that sort of that X-Files vibe, though, where like it was good, it was very good for its time, and holds up pretty well.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see it, and I understand it's like a slight overhaul of the story.
Yeah, they changed Sam, aka George's kids, because James Caan's character side, he's not calling him Sam Francisco, so he starts calling him George.
Right, so he's George for the rest of the movie. But yeah, it's a fun mystery, traditional buddy cop stuff with a lot of cool alien moments thrown in.
Yep,
and Mandy Patinkin is honestly great.
He is great. This one is not available on streaming, but it is available for like $8 on Amazon as a DVD.
Yeah, that's where I got it.
Is it just DVD? No Blu-ray?
No Blu-ray.
We'll get around to it.
Maybe. All right. That about wraps it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. And until that time,
Yo-Jo!
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at Rogues Gallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. And we'll see you in the store, and you can listen to us again next week.